Welcome to Teamwork, A Better Way, the podcast filled with stories, experiences, and insights from leading high-performing team experts. Here are your hosts, Spencer Horn and Christian Napier.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Friday episode of Teamwork, A Better Way. I'm Christian Napier, and I'm joined by Spencer Horn and our very special guest who has returned to us since, gosh, Jax, we were talking before. I guess it was just right after the pandemic is when you came on, when we were first starting this podcast. So, Jax, we're so great to have you, or grateful to have you here joining us today.
Thrilled to be back. Repeat offender here, but I'm so excited for us to be able to do some reflections from when I was last on your show to where I'm at today. It'll be awesome.
Well, we're glad to have you. Normally, we don't pop your face on right away, but we were just having such a chat that we completely forgot where we were in the time. So we just went right to, and just left you up there. So instead of bringing you out of the green room. So we're so glad. That's
probably, you know what? I think our guests would rather look at her than us.
Anyway, oh, absolutely. Spencer, are you kidding me?
That's so awesome.
Good to be with you, Jax and Christian. So start us off. I get to talk about Jax because it's been a long time since our listeners heard about her. And so there's going to be a lot of new people. As a matter of fact, we have, I don't know if you know who this is, Jax. You know James Driscoll?
I do. Yes, James. Such an amazing human. Hey, so glad that you're here.
Yeah. So we have people that will shout out every once in a while. I'll try to put them on the screen if they do. But Jax Scott, or Jacqueline Scott, is a distinguished special operations warrant officer with 18 years of decorated military service, and her expertise spans cybersecurity, electronic warfare, and international operations. And beyond her military career, she's an influencer, an author, a YouTuber, a co-host of award-winning podcast called Two Cyber Chicks. She's just everywhere in the cyber world right now on podcasts. You get to see her on LinkedIn everywhere. And as the founder of Outpost Gray, Jax provides mentorship to cyber security professionals and guides individuals in building their online brands through thought leadership, which she is doing a great job of setting that example. Love seeing what you're doing out there with your brand, Jax. And her book, The Cybersecurity Career Master Plan, serves as a roadmap for aspiring professionals in the field. And her advocacy extends to supporting female combat veterans through Special Operations Associations of America, where she is a member of the board of directors. I bet there's some interesting conversations that happen in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
She is leading the charge on the proposed Jax Act, focusing on military, medical disability, and mental health. And she's an alumnus, Christian, of Georgetown University, no small feat, with a master's degree in cybersecurity risk management. And she is dedicated to enhancing cybersecurity, promoting mental health awareness, and nurturing leaders in the field. Welcome to Teamwork, A Better Way, Jax.
Thank you, Spencer. Love it. Thank you. Excited to be here.
So much has happened since we were last with you. Can you bring us up to speed a little bit about what got you on this cybersecurity path, and what have you learned? What do you love? What's new?
Yeah, I love talking about the journey. So I got into the tech space in 2008 through the military. It was just information technology at the time. Cyber wasn't a thing. And I didn't realize it until later on. But at that time, I was still battling kind of internally with my own worthiness. So in 2008, even though I was in IT, I was going to the military schools, I was actually an honor grad at my school. I thought I wasn't smart enough for this field. So fast forward a few years, I was trying to get out of the field. An opportunity came up, and it was a special operations program called the Cultural Support Team. And I applied for it, was selected for it. And I started just diving headfirst into kind of intelligence work. And I did that for a few years, stayed in the special ops. And then I got this wild opportunity right around 2013. There was a branch that they were developing in the Army called electronic warfare. And I had no idea what this was. We didn't even really know what it was in the Army because it was still being kind of developed out. And I said, you know what? Why not? I don't have any plans for my life right now. I'll give this a shot. went through the school, did exceptionally well in the schoolhouse, but still had this underlining, like, I'm not good enough for this. But what was super interesting for me, Spencer and Christian, is that when I look back on my life, I actually could see and I can pinpoint all of these times I kept getting sucked back into technology. So then in 2015, you know, I'm at this point where I'm like, I'm an electronic warfare officer, I'm out of tech. The Army decides to take electronic warfare and put us under cyber. So now we're sitting under the cyber branch. Fast forward a few more years, and now I'm kind of doing cyber operations. And I get pulled into a deployment with Special Forces to do a deployment to Europe called Atlantic Resolve. That is when I landed in 2019, first part of it, January timeframe, and I started understanding this whole world of cybersecurity, strategic cybersecurity, and I was able to put some of my intelligence knowledge into play, which then landed me my first corporate job working at FireEye, which is now Mandiant at the time. And I started doing cyber threat intel. And then that was kind of the doorway. I always say, if you give me an inch, I will kick open the door. That was my inch into this field. And then that was the moment, that was 2019. That was kind of about a year right before we reconnected and did the podcast. A lot was going on in my life. I didn't have anything to lose. So what I decided is I was going to literally go headfirst into this field. And that's when I decided to dive headfirst into formal education, informal education. So YouTube training, reading books, doing all of these things to get extremely smart in this field. And now fast forward to where we are today, just now recently stepping into my now current role as the Vice President of Cybersecurity. And it has been an absolute whirlwind, but I can tell you that where I'm at today, it happened because I finally started to see what my value was. And I started to realize that so many people can do this field regardless of your IQ. It just takes you to take time to apply yourself and educate yourself in this field.
So that's really interesting, because you went from I'm not good enough. And I'm really interested about where that came from. I also love the fact that you got smart in the intelligence field.
Yeah.
I think you were already intelligent and got smarter. But hey, before you answer that, there's a couple other people that are shouting out to you. And so I want to, here's Deborah Manzanares.
Oh, Deb, I love you. Thank you. She's amazing. Yes.
And that's awesome. And here's a friend of mine, Nathan Champion, out in the Sacramento area.
Yes.
A Let's Go Warrant Officer, is also a military man. Nathan is an incredible individual. But thanks for joining the show. So tell us how you got over that and realize now that you were worthy.
Yeah, great question on that, because it's not an easy answer. I'll tell you that my unworthiness started at a young age of just no fault of my parents at all. It was the culture that we were kind of raised in. Women shouldn't go into STEM, more of a fear from them versus me. I was kind of a fearless kid, but I was reinforced of like, you're not smart enough to do math. You're not smart enough to do these things. Try to find something that's a little easier for you. So what happened though is, you know, I had these reinforced negative thought processes about myself, and it was, and I shared this with you actually, Spencer, because you helped me kind of shift my life in 19. But what had happened is in 2018, due to various different struggles in my life and not addressing the traumas that were in my life, also due to war and PTSD and other things, I hit rock bottom. It was the best thing that happened to me now that I'm able to reflect back on it. But when 2018 happened, I was homeless and I had a business that was absolutely failing itself. So when I got the opportunity to deploy in 2019, it was a godsend. And when I received that deployment, it was the first time in a long time that I had started to finally receive a steady paycheck to allow me to basically just like breathe and think and kind of figure out, okay, I don't like where I'm at, but how do I get to where I want to be? And then I phoned you. You actually took my call in 2019 because we had met working for, volunteering for a nonprofit in Las Vegas. And I don't remember the exact conversation, but I remember how I felt, which was really desperate and not knowing how to get out of where I was. And you gave me some guidance to help me get to a new place. And I just remember at that point in time, I just knew that I had to do things different in my life, regardless of fear. So going back to telling you about how I got my first entry job, and it was FireEye. When I got that inch into the community and I saw the opportunity in front of me, regardless of fear and regardless of all of the resistance that was kind of facing me, I knew that I didn't want to go back to 2018. And so I hunkered down and I pretty much just told myself, like, I'm not going to look back. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to succeed in this field. And that's exactly what I did. And so that's when I, again, going back to like just over-educating myself, mentors were a huge key. When I started this journey, maybe one or two mentors. Now I have a plethora of mentors in a full community that I can lean on. And that's what's so amazing through this. Kathy is one of those individuals that just popped up. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have taught a course at ACI Learning. I wouldn't be speaking at Wild West Hacking Fest. Like, it's all about community and supporting one another. And I created that through being fearless, and not just being fearless, facing my fears, knowing I had these insecurities and then pushing forward through them.
Well, your story, Jax, is amazing, and it's awesome. You have this community. They're here supporting you during this podcast, which is fantastic. I like how you went through this experience and in hindsight say, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. Not only because you can recognize it, but I believe that it puts you in a unique position to be helpful to other people. And so I'm wondering if you can maybe just take a moment and share how you have not only transformed your challenges to better your own life, but how you are using that to provide empathetic leadership and mentorship to others who may be in a similar situation that you were in 5 or 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, you said the word I was thinking about, empathy. I will tell you, that is one thing that I learned through my own struggles. My process is to have empathy for people, because we hear this all the time, but I think to put it in perspective, when you've literally hit rock bottom, you've come out of it, you really do start to realize that everybody has something going on. Like, we all have struggles. Some people might be the brightest people that you've ever met and they're always smiling, but there's something that they're dealing with. There's a struggle that they're dealing with, and everything is relative to our environment within the world. And so I'm very cognizant of that when I work with people. Another thing that I am very careful about is that I want to just give all of my time. And there was a point where I was just giving so much of my time that I was burning myself out because I wasn't giving back to myself. So there was an individual that actually reached out to me and he wanted to hop on a call with me as an example of what happened. And I want very much to support this individual, but I don't have the time to keep hopping on calls with so many people. It takes a lot of time to mentor people. But what I will do is I will still communicate with that person. I will have them pose questions to me. I will provide them feedback. So I'll still connect with the community. So that's one way, as far as my community, how I will connect with people. If they reach out to me, I do my best to try to message them back. But another thing is, what I've done, especially with my employees, is always taking the mindset that we're all doing the best we can. And that has helped me immensely not get frustrated at situations where maybe I feel like somebody should be operating at a higher level, because I'm recognizing, and it goes back to that empathy piece too, but I'm recognizing that we're all doing the best that we can with the tools that we have, the education that we have, wherever we are at our life, like, we're doing the best that we can. So that's one thing that, those are some things that I do that just really helps me. And I think I do a really good job giving back to my community. I wish I could do more to support others, but I think there's a finite balance between supporting others, but also giving back and supporting yourself at the same time.
Well, and that's actually where we met, as you were giving to the community and really helping a census or a population that was needing protecting, really, that was, vulnerable. And that's where I met you. And the first thing I noticed about you is you are a protector by nature. And so you naturally want to help people. And as you just described, that sometimes can have a cost that is sometimes too much. And we get to help ourselves before we can ever help others. So that's fabulous. And I thank you, Jax, for you're kind to say so. I just see how powerful and amazing you are. And, you know, you joined our podcast 4 years ago, and then you look at what she's doing, Christian. I mean, she takes an inch and absolutely just explodes it in terms of everything that she does. Whatever she's touching is just going bananas. But the theme of this show today is really about how to improve communication. And you're an advocate for effective communication and inclusive leadership. So I want to go back before we come forward again. And, you know, as we were talking before about your experience in as a special warrant officer, how have you seen, Jax, effective communication impact team performance? And second part is, what strategies have you found to be most effective to build trust, camaraderie, and really within that diverse, high-stress environment that you were operating under?
Mm. Okay, so from the special forces viewpoint, communication in the special forces and in that type of environment is going to be very different than in corporate America. So I will kind of try to approach both of these and give you my insights as far as how I communicated in the special ops community and how I communicate in corporate America, which are actually very, very different with some slight similarities. And so in special operations, what made me successful and makes a lot of soldiers successful is being able to see the operational picture and be able to make clear, concise, and quick decisions that in essence could save or could also destroy a life if you're not careful. So time is essence when you're in the battlefield, and so you don't have time like in corporate America to be nice and to be careful of hurting people's feelings. So in the SF, you're very much taught to be very direct, be very concise. And what I learned, and one of the biggest struggles from my very first job when I rolled into corporate America, is that doesn't work as well in corporate America. So I think that's why I'm such an advocate about communication, because this was one of the areas that I struggled in the most, because I thought I'm a good communicator. At least I thought I was, because I was an effective special operator in what I did in the military. But then I quickly realized that in the civilian sector, in a way that I explain this, is that in the civilian sector, you need to be able to gain trust and influence for your people to want to follow you. But in the military, it's extreme management, meaning if I walk in because of my rank structure and being a CW3, I am naturally going to have authority, and you are naturally going to listen to me if you are beneath me, because that is the military structure. So you're going to naturally listen to what I tell you to do, regardless if you agree to it or not, because you could get in trouble for not doing that. Well, that's not how we're structured in the civilian sector. So effective communication, from what I've been able to gather in working in this space and working with Generation Zs to millennials and up, is that you need to be able to build trust with your team. And the way that you can build trust with your team is you've got to show that empathy. And the way to show the empathy, and this is, I think it's pretty simple, is that you meet with your individuals on a one-on-one basis. And this doesn't have to be done every week, but I would say at least every month. And you'll know your team as far as the individuals that need more time with you versus don't. But I don't care what level you're at an organization, it's important to build the trust. And the way to do that is you've got to be able to have those conversations with them. You've got to ask them questions about wanting to know, how's their life? Where, like, do they have kids? What are their goals and ambitions outside of work? So it boils down to creating a essence of commonality between one another, even though there could be cultural differences, even though there could be religious differences. You could be from completely different places in the world, male versus a female, but you can still create trust within that team and then in essence create effective communication among that team. But it is important to make that time and lead with empathy and lead with active listening. And these were some key things that I did not learn in the special ops. And one of the things that I think negatively affected me in my first 1.5 jobs in corporate America that I had to quickly learn.
Jax, I love that you explain a little bit about that transition, because there's actually people on the show right now that have been in the military. There are so many people that are making that transition. They're incredible leaders. They're dedicated to their country. They're dedicated to their families. And then they come into corporate America and they struggle just like you. Mm-hmm. And one of my mentors is a Marine. You never stop being a Marine, right? But yeah. So he does so much work, nonprofit. He created a organization called Purple Star Families, but so much in teaching about communication and how to communicate. And he had also struggles, as you experienced. And, you know, it's interesting when Amy Cuddy, I don't know if you know who she is. She's a famous psychologist. She's been on YouTube. She talks about presence, and you're somebody that has a lot of presence when you meet people. But she says when people meet you, they judge you on two things. Number one, can I trust you? And can I respect you? And that's what psychologists call warmth and credibility, basically, right? And so which is more important, credibility or warmth, trust or respect? Well, they're both equally as important, but the order is really instructive. Mm. It's warmth, which you related to empathy, and trust, before you can ever show your credibility or your competence, right? So your competence matters less if I don't trust you. I mean, think about it evolutionarily. I mean, if we were Neanderthal, I'm part Neanderthal, so I can relate to the story. But, you know, we're going back to the caveman days. I mean, Jax, with your future, spouse or whoever, your partner someday, if I was this visiting caveman, you didn't know me, you really care how good I am at building fire if you're afraid I'm going to kill your husband and sell you into slavery? I don't get the right to demonstrate my leadership skills unless you trust me first. And in the corporate world, there is not that command structure. They need to know the why. They need to have the motivation. Why are we doing this? Teach me and help me understand. And leadership is about that pull and people wanting to do things for you because, I mean, if you haven't listened to the show, I talk about my great mentor. I worked so hard for that man because I loved him. And he was somebody that got the best out of me because I wanted to do what he wanted me to do. Not because he was the CEO and I had to do it, but because he was tough on me. And I didn't want to let him down. And that comes from that trusting relationship. And I'm just going to throw something out here because you've been talking so much about empathy. I hope you don't mind. And then I have a few people we need to shout out their comments here. A lot of times people don't think of empathy as the ability to actually kill the enemy. You need that in the military. Why would empathy come into a fighter pilot being able to shoot down the enemy? Because the non-empathetic pilot or warrior doesn't care about the enemy and therefore could potentially be defeated. But if you respect even that enemy, you're going to learn about them and care enough about them. And think of that, how that happens in the corporate world. In a way, we have empathy when we understand our competition and how we can do better than them. And that's actually a form of empathy that a lot of people don't think of.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because I've always seen it kind of differently as far as like, I didn't feel like when I came out of those combat situations and started kind of trying to find myself, I felt like I lacked empathy and that I had to, in a way, find empathy. But maybe it wasn't empathy that I had lost. Maybe it was more of just losing myself and like who and just loving myself and caring for myself that I tied to empathy.
Yeah, interesting. And I mean, if you think about some of the people you served with, did they hate the enemy? Or did was there a level of respect? So that's a lack of empathy, right? But if you care about them enough that you understand.
But there was a level of respect too, but it was, there was a lot of hate too. Yeah, right. That's interesting. Huh.
So you can see how that could actually work against you in some ways, making decisions that you have to make so quickly based on hate, which is emotion versus empathy.
Yeah.
So I want to shout out a couple people, and I know Christian's got stuff to say. So another comment from Kathy. She's just so proud of your accomplishments and how an inspiration you are. Moshin Khan, I'm going to add his comment up here. He's here for the first time in the podcast. So glad you joined us. Thank you for. We have people that come in from all over the world. Moshin, I don't know where you're from, but let us know. James loved your Driscoll, your friend, loved your explanation about the transition from learning how to communicate in special forces situations to corporate America.
He's a vet as well. That's probably why he gets it. Yep.
And I think this deserves a great explanation. It took me years to learn to lead with empathy because being direct and just getting things done is my personality. It's a balance. And, you know, Kathy, it's interesting. One of the things that I talk about is what's called flexible authenticity, which sounds weird because over 1,000 studies have been done that says there is no one leadership style that gives you an advantage. But the one characteristic that all the best leaders have in common is the ability to build trust, which comes from authenticity, which there's a connection there to empathy, right? So you said something that ties in perfectly with this, and that is meeting one-on-one with your people where they are. Communicating in a way that they can hear, not that you're just comfortable with because this is how you've always done it. Mm-hmm. And that's the flexibility that I'm talking about. You're not changing your values. You're not changing your beliefs. You're changing your behavior. Mm-hmm. And that's what I heard you say.
Oh, that's so good. You said it so much more eloquently than me. It's like you teach this or something. But it's so right. I mean, you're spot on. Meeting them where they're at and being authentic. There's that balance. And Kathy is very direct. I love it. But I retired from the Air Force 10 years ago. Yes, still struggle with empathy and not being so direct. Yep, I get it, James.
I love these comments. Christian, sorry, man. I don't have enough. I'm not having enough empathy. I'll start.
Well, I have another question, but I kind of want to stick on the empathy theme here for a second here, Jax. So we're hearing from people that this is, for some people, having empathy is just kind of part of their personality. It's kind of their part of their character. It's their normal mode of operation. But we're seeing some comments from some of our viewers here today that it's challenging for them. And so I'm curious to hear your take on how you developed empathy. I know a lot of that came from your own personal experience, but how you think leaders can develop empathy, because just looking at what our viewers are saying here, this has been something that they've been struggling with for a long time.
God, that's a really good question. I'm going to think through this. So this isn't a well thought out question or answer to the question, but I love doing this kind of thing. So stream of consciousness is going to come. So empathy to me, and I mean, overall, is the ability to relate or understand to how somebody else is feeling and where they are in their life. And you asked how did I create empathy? And before my rock bottom point in 2018, I can tell you that I was one angry individual. I led with anger. I didn't lead with love. And that was my own pain and agony that I was dealing with. It was kind of a defense mechanism. I prided myself on not crying. So having empathy with it would then open me up to have to feel my own feels to then feel another person's feelings. So I learned to have empathy for myself before I could have empathy for others. And what I mean by that is I learned to love myself, forgive myself, accept myself, all of those things. And what I started realizing is that I naturally started doing those things to others because how I started treating myself and what was going on internally started shifting my external world. And I naturally wanted to treat others the way that I was treating myself. So I naturally, without realizing it, and then I started, then it was this moment, I don't know when the moment was, but I can tell you there was this moment where I started realizing, oh my gosh, this is how you connect with people, like really understanding where they're coming from, really understanding their feelings. And that goes back to having those one-on-one conversations and not having them just be about work talk, but asking them about what's going on in their life. And you'll realize, maybe not on the first conversation, but when you've worked with people for 1-2 years, they start to open up with you. One of my employees at my last job, because he felt he could trust me and he felt like our conversations were a safe space, he told me about his wife's miscarriage and how he had been struggling for the last week because of like what she was going through. And I had, this was a Thursday, and I had no idea I knew something was going on. So I had asked him, is there anything going on? And then he openly shared that with me and my heart hurt for him. And so I obviously gave him time, or encouraged him, take time off, do these things. But it meant the world to me that he felt safe enough to share that with me. And that going back to those that might be struggling with identifying how to have empathy for others, I would encourage you to look internal. I would encourage you to maybe look at how you treat yourself. Do you struggle with treating yourself with love? Do you struggle with giving yourself empathy, with your good, like positive self-talk? We are naturally wired, unfortunately. Most of us are naturally wired to have negative self-talk. And unless we're very, very conscious about it through breathing exercises, meditation, or journaling, or other modalities, we are unable to change the way that our minds think and the ways that we treat ourselves. And that's a lot of the things that we do externally are an impact of what's happening internally within us.
Stream of consciousness. Rubbish. That was perfect. And it was... You know, because one of the things I was going to, you're answering all the questions I want to ask you, because you're like, how does the leader make that transition? And you gave that information. It's start with evaluating yourself. And I love that. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do sometimes. You're absolutely right. It actually takes us to consciously focus to be positive, because we believe negative thoughts about ourselves, which you described that happened to you. We believe negative about others. That's why bad news travels so quickly. That's why, you know, that's why news exists, because we believe it first, because it's a defense mechanism. Because if it's true, you know, we could be victims. And so we have to protect ourselves. But so you gave such great advice as to how to make that transition, have empathy. And I there's more comments I want to put up here in a second. But one of the things I wanted to know is, what was the outcome of that trusting relationship you had in this? Because let me give you a backstory, or the reason for my question. I just had a conversation this week with an incredible individual. He's in Canada, works for the government, and is a manager of quite a few, 18 direct reports. And he's come to a point where he absolutely has no personal conversations. It's all business. There's no... he has completely separated that, just because of part of the environment, because there is a lack of trust. And I feel like it's really hard to operate under those conditions. Mm-hmm. And I want to hear from you. What's the benefit of being able to have that conversation and know about his wife's miscarriage? What does that lead to? How does that benefit a leader? Because mm-hmm. we're talking about effective communication skills here. So some people are saying, well, why do I need to know all that? What's the end? I mean, because what's the business purpose? And I know that sounds so mercenary, right? That there has to be a business person, a reason for empathy. Empathy, the business results, I think, come from empathy, but it has to be real empathy. Can't be just a technique. But I'd love to hear from your perspective what you think that is.
So the question, just to make sure I understand, is understanding why it matters to know, like, have those candid conversations with our employees, or them being willing to open up to us on that level.
Yeah, how does that benefit you as a leader?
Yeah. Oh man, so many levels. So him, first off, him being willing to share something like that with me, I very first thing I do is, and I wasn't always like this, but I take it as I am blessed and I am honored that you would feel comfortable enough to share such a vulnerability with me. And I do that not just with my employees, but even with friends. If they want to share struggles that are going on, like that is sacred to me as much as it is to them. And they can feel that. So that's one of the first things that is really important that I think the listeners need to understand. Like, these conversations, if somebody is reaching out to you and telling you these things, they trust you and you are a safe space and you should view this as an honor. And on top of it, what will happen is when you get employees, relationships, anybody in your life that are willing to share these things with you, but looking from the lens of an employee, it means that they're going to be a more effective employee overall. Trust creates better productivity. If I want to say it kind of in corporate terms, I know that when I was working with him, he told me he actually had a people manager and he had another leader that he fell under. He just worked on my team. And so he told me, I just feel that I can be more, it's like a more comfortable environment that I can share these things with you about. So what that turned out, what that like created within our relationship is he was more open and receptive when I wanted to provide him feedback about his presentation skills or about his leadership style, because he knew that I would always come from a place of love and caring. Now, I will tell you, when he first became my employee and I got him into this stretch role, it was about 2 to 3 months and it wasn't friction, but we had challenges. You're going to have challenges with employees. It's just going to happen. But as we built the trust and as I had candid conversations with him, he started to realize, like, Jax is in my corner. She's not here to destroy my career. She's not here to set me up for failure. Instead, she's here because she wants to see me succeed. And those are the conversations I would have with him. So when he shared that with me, it showed me he trusts me and he knows that I'm not going to use this information against him. He knows that he can console in me and it's going to stay right there. And that speaks volumes as far as our effectiveness as a team and being able to work together as a team.
So perfect, perfect answer. And it's so right. I mean, if you're listening to this, there's research that shows there's less time off that's taken, less sick days. They're more engaged. They're going to work longer. They're going to work harder. They're going to be more committed to you as a leader, and not because you're going to take advantage of them, because they truly care. I just had a coaching client, a different one that I was talking to this week, that we've been working with the CEO of this construction company, a great company, but he's been with the company for 21 years and gotten to a place where, like, you know, I'm going to stay. And the CEO has been doing a lot of work to make some shifts, but he made a shift. And what's interesting is this manager said, I left work happy. Mm. Now I want you to picture this. I don't know if any of you have heard of a gentleman by the name of Clayton Christensen, who was a incredible business and thought leader. He's the one who developed, you're in technology. You've ever heard of disruptive technology? Mm. He's the one who created all that. He was a professor of business at the MBA program at Harvard and came up with this whole idea of, that Uber and all these different companies have disrupted so many, Netflix. They used Clayton Christensen's idea. And he talks about management and leadership in this way. He imagines the person who's working for them going home frustrated, not feeling valued, feeling like that she wasn't heard and that what she was doing didn't matter. Now she goes home to her family and to her spouse and to her children, feeling of low worth and of value. What's the impact on her life and then the people in her life? On the other hand, what happens when you listen to that person and they know they're cared for and they go home thinking, I made a difference today. Yeah. I have people in my corner that trust me and that are on my team. I can face the world because I have a tribe. And here's, I'm going to quote from him. I hadn't planned on doing this, but he says, "My conclusion, management is the most noble of professions if practiced well. No other occupation offers as many ways to help others learn and grow, take responsibility, and be recognized for achievement and contribute to the success of the team. More and more MBA students come to school thinking that the career in business means buying, selling, and investing in companies. That's unfortunate. Doing deals doesn't yield deep rewards. That comes from building up people. I want students to leave my classroom knowing that." And that comes from his book, How Will You Measure Your Life?
That was really good. Yeah.
So I want to put up, Nathan has, I agree. I love Jack's comments about everybody trying their best.
And thanks, Nathan.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. I've got a question for Jax. So, and it kind of dovetails off of, Spencer, your story about the manager in Canada who has 18 direct reports. And Nathan's comment saying that the one-on-ones are also huge. And basically what you were also talking about, Jax, being able to have these one-on-ones. You know, going back to something you mentioned earlier, a big difference between the military and the corporate side was that decisions had to be made very quickly. And the ramifications of those decisions could have very significant consequences, either positively or negatively. And that in corporate America, we have time. But what we're seeing now with especially the advent of new technologies like AI, their growth is exponential. And things are happening very rapidly. You know, earlier this week, we had a meeting with some folks from Google. And they were telling us that it took Google 9 years to develop Bard, which was their first generative AI tool. And then it took Google 9 months to get from Bard to Gemini. And then it took Google 9 weeks to get from Gemini to Gemini 1.5. And what I am seeing out in the workplace is that things are going so fast that people can't keep up. You know, and this causes anxiety, you know, and because they can't skill up fast enough, and leadership can't make decisions fast enough because the environment is constantly changing. And so I'm curious from your standpoint, and also being in technology and, you know, cyber and all that yourself, you know, how, you know, from a leadership standpoint, when it comes to communication, how can you be the calming, steadying influence in a sea of constant and accelerating change?
Man, you never come with the easy questions, do you, Christian?
Aren't they always great?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that's like the $1 million question right there. That is such a great question, such a hard answer. I would say that you can do, there's a book actually called The Speed of Trust, and I'm reading it right now. I should have probably read the entire book before this interview, but that's
Cubby
okay.
People, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great book.
I'm sorry for putting you on the spot like that. I apologize.
Oh, no, you're good. So yeah, speed of trust is important. I think that there's still a certain amount of time that you need with somebody to be able to build credible trust and create a foundation. I think it's typically around, in my opinion, 2 to 3 months, because you need to be able, some people need, they can trust you much quicker than other employees, but they need to see if you're consistent. Do you follow through? Do you say you're going to do it? Like, do you follow through with what you're going to say? Things like that are really important. As far as technology goes and the speed of technology, it goes, in my opinion, you need to be agile. Your team needs to be agile. And one of the things that I see as a challenge, depending on the space that you work in, is that technology is a space of constant change, and a lot of people don't like change. And so I think to help build trust, and this is just going to be, again, another stream of my consciousness, what I would do in that situation, and I'm actually just taking on a new team, there's a lot of moving pieces within my organization. So one of the things that we have to do as leaders at the higher level is we've got to live the practice. So we've got to be willing to accept and be open to change and be able to empower our team to be able to feel confident and comfortable with that change. And if we're able to do that, then we will able to, in essence, be able to create trust with the team, because they're going to see that we're supporting them, we're guiding them, we're the Northern Star, we're helping push them. And as long as we can still provide them a roadmap, a direction, and we even at times are in front leading them, at times holding their hand and moving them along, and at times in the back, they know that we're a constant and we're there. But I think the key to this is just having clear direction, having clear guidance with them, and also teaching them through our own behaviors that change is okay, that it's a good thing, and allowing them to also embrace the aspect of change and that it's a good thing.
Isn't that nice? You can get a little water break there.
Yeah, you guys see that in the green room. I'm like, oh, water, yay.
I do it when you're talking. So, you know, you talked about earlier just your process of meditating and staying positive. And, you know, Christian just talked about the anxiety, and you did as well, talking about the change that is happening. Do you have any other insights as to just mental well-being that you know works, that you've seen work for you and members of your team dealing with high stress situations?
Yeah, I think outside of the standard things that we talk about, get outdoors, get the sunlight, do the things.
By the way, I think you called me, you were like in Czechoslovakia one day running on a trail. I don't remember.
Yeah, that probably.
You and I are always on trails. You're like, I'm going to call him from a trail.
Yeah. I like that because you can multitask, you know,
totally.
You can still get out and have a conversation with somebody. Yeah.
I find that so many ideas come to me when I'm out there, and it just all of a sudden I'm like, I used to feel guilty about getting outside in nature, but all of a sudden ideas and thoughts would just flood. Yeah. And it was so productive. Anyway, sorry.
No, that's such a good point. Never Eat Alone, I think, is a really good book to read, but it talks about capitalizing on your time and how to like properly utilize it. Okay, anxiety and how to deal with it. Okay, I think one of the best approaches to this, outside of the mindset work and the getting outdoors and doing things that you really truly enjoy to help reduce your anxiety, if we're talking about collectively as a team here, one of the things that I have identified that has really helped reduce anxiety, because you're going to still have it within teams, but every team that I had to start from scratch, build out a program, there's natural anxiety when you're building a team from scratch. But what I have identified is that when you can start outlining a roadmap and providing tasks that are associated that with that, and then you're starting to break down those tasks and those responsibilities to your team, so they start feeling, and this is the key word, they start feeling like they have ownership of the pieces, the moving pieces within that strategic objective, you will actually start to see that the anxiety will start to kind of dissipate a little bit, because now they know why, going back to the why they're doing what they're doing and where it's going to take them. I think what happens naturally within humans is if we are just doing things, or we don't have a clear roadmap of how to get to the end goal, it is naturally going to give us anxiety. So it is my responsibility as their leader to, in the role that I'm stepping into now, one of the things that I need to do is to create a clear roadmap for my team, as well as connect all of the other lines of businesses together. And one of the ways that I need to do that is to create, you know, align it to our strategic objective, but at the lower level, create a roadmap that I can then figure out, and this is another key thing, figure out the strengths of my team, talk to them too, to figure out actually do they even enjoy what they're doing now, and then align them to that roadmap, to those objectives, and then give them ownership. and then explain to them why they're doing what they're doing and how it's going to get them to the end goal. That's what I've identified as like, then you're like, okay, I get why we're doing this.
Yeah. And that is such a great answer, because that also actually improves the level of conversation that is happening, which is what we're wanting, because they know where they're going. Yep. And when roles are clear, then action is more clear. Anxiety is reduced. I 100% agree. If it's not clear and we're stressed, we turn to tend inward instead of outward, mm-hmm. or in terms mm-hmm. of communication.
I want to add to that. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Please go. No, do.
I wanted to add to what you mentioned about, you didn't say it this way, but I wanted to add, like, it makes them, it's a sense of calm and presence, like they're present in the moment. And when you're present in the moment, you can be more creative, and they don't have a fear of wanting to share their thoughts and opinions about the roadmap, where we're going.
Which,
like,
is the communication that I'm referring to. And you created that. So I was making that connection. Yep. To our theme, because it's right. Yep. On. And there's actually a process. I don't know if you've ever heard of job crafting. And mm-hmm. to create that ownership as an effective leader like you are, there is a process that actually allows the team member to create their own job description within the parameters of the mission and vision. It's called job crafting. And if you don't have a leader like Jax that is giving you those opportunities, create your own. Take it to your executive and say, here's what excites me. Here's what turns me on about what I do. And I'd like this to be my, it's a whole process called job crafting. You can
I love this. Yeah. Yeah. Because now you're helping them. If you put them in, they could have anxiety. They could know what the future state is, but their anxiety is based on the fact that they're tired of looking at syslogs all the time. They're really good at it, but they actually want to do CTI, or they want to do
getting energy from what they love. Yeah. We're running out of time, Christian. It's going so dang fast here, but would you give us some insight about your book and its focus, and, you know, do a little shameless plug here, girl, talk about it.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Where is it? Hold on. I got one over here. Actually, I'm going to pull it out. Look at this. Dun, 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 dun. You know what I will do too? I'm going to do a raffle. You guys want to do a raffle? I'll give away a free book.
I'd love it.
Yeah. If you guys put like hashtag, what should we say? What's the hashtag, guys? Hashtag
impact. Hashtag Jax rocks.
Okay. Hashtag Jax rocks. And then we'll select a random person. But Cybersecurity Career Master Plan, a book that I wrote a few years ago with a few amazing authors. Some of the community out there knows a few of them, Dr. Gerald Osher. And Gerald and I had gotten together with the intent of wanting to create a book that would help individuals that did not have a roadmap to break into this industry. So the intent of the book was for either people trying to break in or individuals that had been in the industry for about 2 or 3 years looking to pivot. So if you're looking to break in or maybe wanting to pivot, that's the book for you. It's broken into three different sections. It's first one's all about cybersecurity. The second one is like, do I do college? Do I do certification and why? And then the third and final is all about branding and then soft skills and communication and networking. So I think it's a pretty amazing book. So thank you for letting me plug it. Thank you, James. Highly recommend. I love you. I paid him to say that.
So I don't know where you wanted. I don't know where you wanted people to put that, but Nathan Champion already put Jax rocks and I put him up.
Yep.
So I say Nathan wins. What about you, Jax?
I'm good with that. Nathan, you win. Let's do it. You got the book.
So I don't know. Just reach out to her on LinkedIn. And,
yes. Yes. Send me a message on LinkedIn.
Yeah. You definitely want to be connected to Nathan. He's awesome.
He's a warrant, I think, too, or he knows about warrants. So yeah, besties already.
He does. You know, it's interesting how many of we just networking we just meet wonderful people and our circle just grows. Yeah. And it's just so awesome. And helping people get into this career is, you know, got to make you feel so fulfilled. Christian, anything you want to say?
I'll just echo what Nathan said. Yay. Woot.
I love it.
It's been a fantastic conversation, Jax, and we appreciate you joining us. And
yeah.
Again, encourage our viewers and listeners, please connect with Jax on LinkedIn, and because she's an amazing person, as so many of our viewers have testified here today through their comments. And Spencer, you're also an amazing individual. Oh, look at that.
That was so cool. I did not mean to do that. That was awesome. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, Spencer, if people want to connect with you and learn how they can build high-performing teams and become effective leaders of high-performing teams, what's the best way for them to reach out and contact you?
LinkedIn. And Christian, Jax, you know why I love this man, right? I mean, he's just so – companies are so lucky – whoever he's consulted with, major organizations. Now the, you know, your organization right now is going to just love you to pieces. So if people want to know more about what you do with your entrepreneurial self, your IT mind, your project management brilliance, I'm talking about World Olympic Games, right? All that kind of stuff. How do they find you?
Hey, just like you guys, LinkedIn, just find me on LinkedIn. And thank you for the kind words, Spencer. And Jax, it was awesome to end the week on a high note with you joining us today. And listeners and viewers, thank you for taking time out of your schedule and being with us as well. Please like and subscribe to our podcast, and we'll catch you again soon.
Hang on, Jax, after we say goodbye.